Monday, December the 12th, erupted into action after the cave-like quietness of Saturday and Sunday. Lyndon was up early and at work, and I spent the morning signing Christmas presents, Asian pictures, old White House prints. In mid-morning, Liz and Nash Castro and Mr. West and Mr. Tolston, who has taken over a phase of Nash's job with the National Park Service as overseer of the White House, met in the West Hall over coffee to talk about the sales of the living White House. How are they doing? I am concerned because the sales of the guidebook have been going down in 66, and so have the visitors to the White House. I had a count done on the number of days, visitor days, that it was closed because of ceremonies in the East Room, press conferences, state luncheons. They had grown. This house is not a museum. It must serve its purposes as both the home and the working center of the President of the United States. But I can't help but feel sad about families who plan their vacation coming from Idaho and Vermont and Florida and get here only to find it is closed that day to visitors. All the steps we can take, scheduling cooperation with the West Wing, getting a tent that will make the Rose Garden more useful for ceremonies next spring and summer, all of those have been taken. I hope with the Living White House to raise the sale of our books. I am proud of it. I feel, too, that I've had something to do with bringing it into being. And very much whether we get those drapes in the state dining room and in the Great Hall and maybe a few more works of art, those depend on the sales of the books from the White House Historical Association. So we had this meeting. It had gone on sale November the 28th. The backlog of orders of 4,000, and the sales had been brisk since then. We thought of other ways to make them more a part of Christmas giving. A special table with Christmas decorations on it, and with a handsome package of books about the White House, the guidebook, the presidents, the living White House. The books to be sold at a kiosk in the Ellipse on the way to where the crowds go for the Christmas pageant. Linda could make her purchases there. Everybody had ideas, Nash so abundantly, and we ended with the feeling that we'd gotten something done. I lunched alone at my desk. Always when I return from the ranch, I go on a black coffee for breakfast, scrambled egg and half a piece of toast and half a piece of bacon for lunch, and steak for dinner diet. My strength of will lasts about 3 days, and that much helps. In the afternoon, I had a meeting with Jim Ketchum about some of the furniture affairs of the house, dictated and went bowling, and then downstairs for a preview of the Christmas decorations. That is when my heart began to sing. They were so beautiful. I hope I have the grace to know that every day I spend here is a privilege, and never more so than at Christmas. The Christmas tree was a dream of toy soldiers and drums and cookies and strings of real popcorn, so colorful and old-fashioned and gay. And everywhere the woodland smell of balsam or spruce or fir, and brightest holly on the mantels, and mistletoe from Texas hanging from the light fixtures. I was still in love with Mrs. Howard's creche, nostalgic for it, but this one which Jane Engelhard had so generously provided and Mrs. Parrish had put together had very wisely gone quite the other way. It was contemporary, gold fabric and paper mache against a background of twigs and tiny sparkling lights, beautiful in its own way. So I went back upstairs singing. John Louis came for my comb out, and I put on my brightest dress, the new pink one, the beads around the neck, for the party that was the real beginning of the Christmas season for the press women of Washington. It was a buffet supper for the 611 women of the American Newspaper Women's Club, the Women's National Press Club, and American Women in Radio and Television, and all of their honorary members. First, I posed with the presidents of these three organizations in front of the Christmas tree, giving to each of them a copy of the Living White House. Liz is not one to overlook a chance like this to make the book known to a lot of people. Linda came in looking absolutely glowing in a deeper pink than mine, terribly smart, her dimples flashing, and said, "I just wanted to show you I'm not on Treasure Island, or wherever it is, and I'm not married." There'd been a story in the paper, I think the day before, that she and George had married and were honeymooning on Treasure Island. I stood in line and met everybody and felt terribly gay and Christmassy the whole time. There were the regulars like Betty Beale and Nancy Dickerson and Muriel Dobbin and Karen Kleinfelter, and lively Wahilla LaHaye, and of course the twins, Frances Lewin and Helen Thomas, and Hazel Markell, and sweet Dorothy McCardle, and Winzola McClendon, and Joe Ripley, whom I admire so much, and Nan Robertson, who does some of the best writing, I think, and Isabel Shelton, and there were some newcomers to the field, Imelda Dixon, Scotty Lanahan, What a feel Washington is for that kind of chatty social column. And among the honorary members, there were two grand dames of the town, Mrs. Robert Lowe Bacon and Mrs. Robert Woods Bliss. How many administrations, how much Washington history they've seen. There were a good many women in government among the honorary members. Eva Adams, director of the Mint. Mrs. Carol Brewster, the senator's wife, looking very lovely. Dr. Francis Kelsey of the Food and Drug Administration. Katie Lockheim of the State Department. Esther Peterson, and Nona Quarles, whose husband used to be Secretary of the Navy, I believe, who now is Public Relations Officer at Dulles Airport. She's always so nice, and seeing her makes a bell toll in my mind about widows and what becomes of them, especially in this town. And Dr. Ellen Winston of HEW. And Kay Graham and Kay Halley came in together, causing me to trip over their names. And there was Linda's boss, Christine Sadler Cove, with warm words about Linda, which I earnestly believe are sincere and made me very happy. And of course, there were plenty of old-timers. They have time to come to something like this. I, too, shall someday be in their ranks. It was Bess Furman Armstrong, who's been writing about the White House for at least 3 decades. And Carrie Davis, an honorary member, and Mae Thompson Evans from the Roosevelt days, and Doris Fleeson, whom I can't help liking, in spite of a fairly frequent slicing up, and dear Esther Freeman. I was delighted to see her among the associate members. And Isabel Griffin, who's certainly an old-timer to me. I met her in the 30s at Mildred Douglas's house. And Rose McKee, who used to cover Lyndon on the Hill, and Hope Ridings Miller of Diplomat, one of the speaker's girlfriends, and Esther Van Wagoner Tufte, whom I'd met at Liz's wedding, and Mae Craig, almost the dean of them all. I had a chance to tell pretty lively Bonnie Angelo how much I liked the little verse she'd sent me, along with a Christmas present of a holly-trimmed doormat. It was a montage of our trips of the last year, and ended up, we like this beat. And all in all, I like this crowd. I find I know so many of them, and by and large, I've gotten better from them than I deserve, and I found them very interesting company. So it was a gay, happy party, and the Christmas spirit was in the air, and the most delightful thing of all were 60 members of the American Light Opera Company, singing, dressed in their choir robes, singing Christmas carols from the stairs. Lyndon came in and spent 10 or 15 minutes reading and smiling and walking around. We had our picture made with the singers. Sometime during the evening, they gave me a Christmas present, a paperweight, a rectangular block of clear plastic in which was embedded actual lead type with the message to Mrs. Lyndon B. Johnson, B.A., B.J., you're our type, plus the club name and the date. This from the Women's National Press Club. I was delighted. There were two of my benefactors from beautification there, too, Polly Logan and Mrs. Rose Zales. Heavily laden buffet tables were spread in the state dining room and the east room, and drinks were passed. It was one of those parties where everybody seemed to have spirit you wanted to create. Laughter, gaiety, Christmas. Eloise came in with Lyndon, and of course immediately found lots of people who were her friends. She's very popular. It was 8:45 before I finally went upstairs and joined Lyndon and Eloise for dinner. Work and activity, our natural milieu, has ended the gray mood of the weekend, at least for now. And I was basking in that happy feeling that every woman has who thinks she's just finished a good party. Later, I went down to the doctor's office to try the wax bath for my right hand. It would be too laughable to have to give up at just 54 to rheumatism or arthritis. Too unlike everything I've thought of myself as being. And then a massage and to sleep.